Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
This week, Fred, about 3 million people watched the Ken Ham, Bill Nye debate on creation. It was a lot of fun. You know, Time magazine, Time.com, they first said about 750,000, but WCPO out of Cincinnati, a Scripps Howard, I think, TV station, they said, talking to Answers in Genesis, it looks like it might be 3 million because some places like Liberty University had 1,500 people watching in an auditorium.
Wow.
Thousands of groups watched this, and it's really a fun event, I think. Well, we were honored to have Ken Ham on our radio program on Monday during the final countdown to the big debate, which was going to be the following day. Fred and I will analyze the debate and critique both sides. Now, for Bill Nye, Fred, I think we should answer various challenges that Nye put out to the audience, implying that creationists would not have answers.
That's right. I'm really looking forward to this. You know, during the debate, you only have so much time. You know,
right.
Ken Ham, you know, you're limited in what you can say.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to knocking some of these out of the park.
So what topics should we respond to? He said Tiktaalik, remember that? The alleged fish that first started to walk on land. That's a funny one.
And then he talked about why don't fossils swim to different layers? That'll be a fun one to go
through. Oh, yeah. That was an interesting terminology. In other words, he meant out of sequence fossils.
Yes.
Like, why don't we find them in the wrong orders?
Yeah. Guess what? He said that we know that the stars create all the elements.
Yes. Anything else he brought up that we should address?
And here's a good one, sexual reproduction. You know, he makes this argument that
that's a prediction of evolution. Yeah, okay, that's a big one.
Yep.
Then also he said, can rock layers form rapidly? Show me where rock layers can form rapidly, right? And he said, you could change me into a creationist immediately.
So we should be able to do that easily.
We should try.
Yeah, we should try. Then, of course, he brings up the radioactivity proving billions of years.
Yes, yes. We should address that, of course. Those are the topics we'll address for Bill Nye. For Ken Ham, I've heard creationists say that, well, Ken Ham should have said this and this, and he should have responded to this and that. But unless you can also show what he should have omitted, because with a timed debate, as we've experienced, for everything you add, you have to leave something out. So what we'll do is identify 10 minutes in Ken Ham's opening remarks. You know, they had their 5-minute and then their 30-minute. We'll identify 10 minutes that he should have omitted. Then he would have had time to include other topics that a lot of creationists were hoping to hear about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it is easy for us to armchair quarterback. You know, we're well-learned on the creation topics, but again, Ken Ham was limited in his time.
Right.
But, you know, there were things that I would have loved to hear. We've talked a lot about it on the show. Dinosaur soft tissue. I mean, that's a real popular one. Carbon 14, we find that everywhere. In fact, I talked to a listener from Missouri, and these were the first two he mentioned. It's like, oh man, I wish those were things that he threw out there because they're so powerful.
Because carbon 14 only lasts thousands of years, and it's in billion-year-old diamonds, and it's in dinosaur fossils.
Yeah, and then the layered strata from Mount St. Helens.
Oh,
Bill Nye served up that ping pong ball right in front of the net for us to slam into his side about Mount St. Helens.
Show me how rock layers could be laid down rapidly, and I'll become a creationist.
Yeah. And remember Dr. Ariel Roth? You know, we talked about the flat gaps in the Grand Canyon.
Oh, yeah.
So Ken Ham showed a great picture of these layers in the Grand Canyon, and there's this flat gap, a straight line. Where's the erosion between the different layers?
Where the evolutionists say there was 100 million years that passed between these two layers.
Yeah.
And you could, like, cut it with a knife. There's no erosion. It's just this perfect layer, like all the other layers where they say there was no gap. And right here, they say, well, there's 100 million years past. No erosion, no deposition. It was just a wink.
Yeah. And, you know, Ken Ham did a good job of bringing up the scientists who are creationists. He had video clips and whatnot.
Yes.
And remember, we had that really fun show where we talked about all those scientists. We started with one.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, we were at hundreds of thousands of PhDs in science and the applied sciences in the U.S. who say that human life requires God's hand.
Oh, that is so exciting. So those topics we just listed for these two guys, for Bill Nye, they're the issues we want to respond to. For Ken Ham, they're issues that it would have been fun if he had the time to bring up. But a little bit about both of these guys. You know, Bill Nye gets discredited for claiming as evidence various outdated arguments that even evolutionists have falsified, and for being unfamiliar with major aspects of his opponent's position.
Yeah, and he kept asking about why doesn't creation make predictions? Oh. And, you know, we've got a show coming up this month about predictions, you know, creationist yeah. predictions. Predictions we've made on this show
yeah.
that have come to fruition.
Even There's one plenty. In the past year.
Yeah.
A big one that Bill Nye would have predicted with the rest of the evolution world. And Fred Williams and Bob Benyar on Real Science Radio predicted it right 2 years ago, and it was just confirmed this past year.
Yeah, and Ken Ham listed some predictions too, but you know yeah. we've got this nice big list, and you yeah. know that was something Bill Nye kept asking for and implying that we don't have any predictions.
So then, what's your overall take on Ken's presentation?
Well, you know, overall, I thought he did a good job. Again, it's easy for us to armchair quarterback. There's a lot of things we'd have liked to have seen in the debate, mm-hmm. but he did do a good job of keeping it in a good perspective. He used some current evidence, for example, the bacteria eating the nitrate.
Yeah,
that is something that evolutionists bring up. It's like, you know, how did the bacteria yeah. evolve that capability?
Right.
And he showed a clip of a PhD scientist
microbiologist
that just totally refutes it.
Who said, look, it's just a switch.
It's so, the information that was already there.
Right.
It's,
and this is like their best evidence. They've been following this bacteria for, what, 30,000 generations. Finally, they said, look at this evidence for Darwinism. Big worldwide headlines. And it's doing something it always could do.
That's right.
And genetically, we know that there are regulatory switches that turn on and off so that if you're in an environment where you got all these citrates, well, that switch could say, hey, let's start eating that stuff.
Yeah. It didn't evolve the capability. The capability yeah. was already there.
So Ken Ham did a good job with that. I think putting the debate in the right perspective, we're talking about God, the authority of God's word, the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, made sure
Christ.
He brought up the gospel, which is great.
It was so great. I think that was very well done. But I also think that, like I said earlier, I think Ken lost even 15 minutes, just wasted them, with a whole distinction between observational science versus historical science.
Yeah, and you and I both, when we talked about the debate after it occurred, that was the first thing that occurred to both of us.
Yes.
You know, that and there was too much time I felt spent on that.
We've talked over the years, Fred, with forensic science, which is so phenomenal, and the whole nation knows forensic science is
yeah.
phenomenal,
yep.
Ken Ham even undermined his own claim that you can't do science regarding the past when he said, well, when you look at evidence from the past, you can use observational and repeatable experiments to evaluate that evidence.
That's right.
So I think the whole argument should not be used in the way it's emphasized by creationists. With that argument, Ken Ham is unwittingly, I think, conceding to the materialist claim that you can only know that which your five senses tell you. We've mm-hmm. exposed that one on this show many times. The atheists say you can only know what your five senses tell you. Well, which of your five senses told you that? Obviously, none of them. So it's self-refuting. So to say the only way we can get the kind of solid knowledge that the scientific process gives us is when you could see it. That is a concession to materialism, but I don't think the creation movement knows. It's not just Ken Ham. It's most of the movement. Think about a builder. Ken would say, well, if you didn't see it being built, you can't know. No one has to see the builder to know that their home had a builder. Mm-hmm. Nobody needs that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that to know it. And what's worse, for Ken Ham's point, let's say you met the builder and you even watched him building this house. That does not give you any more certainty that the house had a builder than those who had never seen him. You don't have any more confidence that somebody built the house than somebody who never met the guy.
That's a really good point.
Visual observation does not trump reason,
mm-hmm.
math, logic, and the mind the way Ken Ham's emphasis implies. If you can't see it, you can't know it as well. That's not true. You can use forensic science to find out what happened. And you could know it as certainly as if you saw it.
Absolutely.
Because you know what else? Observation is not 100% accurate. We could observe things and be confused.
Yeah, my wife tells me that all the time.
And of course, there's a difference between observational and historical science, but it's simply not the major issue. It sounds like you're on the defensive the whole time. Don't blame us for not using science to show what happened in the past.
Yes.
It was a waste of maybe 15 minutes. So why don't we go to one of those Bill Nye topics? One of my favorites is sexual reproduction.
Okay. So we got a clip on that?
Yeah.
There are certain fish, the top minnows, that have the remarkable ability to have sex with other fish.
Why is he giggling?
Traditional fish sex, and they can have sex with themselves. Now, one of the old questions in life science, everybody, one of the old sort of chin strokers, is why does any organism, whether you're an ash tree, a sea jelly, a squid, a marmot, why does anybody have sex? I mean, there are more bacteria in your tummy right now than there are humans on Earth. And bacteria, they don't bother with that, man. They just like split themselves in half. They got new bacteria. Like, let's get her done. Let's go. But why does any, think of all the trouble a rose bush goes to make a flower and the thorns and bees swimming, flying around, interacting. Why does anybody bother with all that? And the answer seems to be your enemies. And your enemies are not lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. No. Your enemies are germs and parasites.
Let's stop the tape right there. He's saying, and he goes on a bit longer, but sexual reproduction helps you overcome disease, for example.
Yeah, it's a big plus for evolution. It's a big plus, right?
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
That's his argument.
Saying, because there's sexual evolution, we could overcome disease and other problems. And so sexual reproduction leads to a very robust species and ecosystem.
Yeah. Isn't okay. that kind of the cart after the horse?
Yeah, I think so, because he's supposed to be showing how evolution would originate sexual reproduction. He implies that because we know it's beneficial, therefore it evolved.
Yeah.
That's a non sequitur. That's a logical fallacy. Because you can identify a worthwhile and important function doesn't mean you know how it originated. And in fact, sexual reproduction, if the audience is knowledgeable, is a huge crisis for evolutionists, and virtually all the leading evolutionists who address it admit this confounding problem. In fact, let's quote a few of them, and you could find all these on our website, rsr.org/sexual reproduction. Right there. Remember you and I interviewed one of our favorite scientists?
Yeah, Walter Remine.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Engineer.
Whole show on the origin of sexual reproduction. So we'll mention some of these famous evolutionists like Kitcher, who wrote this. One problem is the existence of sexual reproduction. Despite some ingenious suggestions by Darwinians, there is no convincing Darwinian history for the emergence of sexual reproduction. We don't know. We've been really creative, ingenious, in fact, but we don't know how it happened.
Well, remember our buddy Richard Dawkins?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he equates it to like a roulette game where the player throws away half his chips at each spin. Because sexual reproduction, what happens? Well, half of your genes are
gone.
They're gone.
And he wrote a book called The Selfish Gene, and how evolution is all about my genes continuing to the next generation. So if you're going to start sexual reproduction, you're losing half of your genes.
That's right.
Right off the bat.
He says, the existence of sexual reproduction really is a huge paradox.
Wow.
This is Richard Dawkins.
Wow.
One of the big spokesmen for evolution.
Yeah. And then, again, these are all leading evolutionists. Go to rsr.org/sexual reproduction, and you could find out all about them. But evolutionists, the origin of the sexual process remains one of the most difficult problems in biology.
Okay, then two other renowned evolutionists, McCod and Levin, said that a survey of evolution biologists would doubtless come up with a consensus that the origin and maintenance of sex is a big, maybe the biggest unsolved problem in evolutionary biology.
They go on to say there is no consensus about where its solution lies. No clear solution emerges.
So the biggest unsolved problem is one of Nye's. And he spent like at least 5 minutes developing this argument. We cut the tape before he went on more and more about this topic.
This strong argument, he claims, as evidence for evolution. And Walter Remine points out they're like magicians.
Yes.
They try to distract you. They're supposed to be explaining how we know that sexual reproduction evolved. But instead, he talks about the benefit of sexual reproduction, yeah, and he pretends that that's evidence of how it evolved.
Yeah, he assumed it evolved and then it becomes evidence for evolution.
Yeah, and there's no way Ken Ham could have done all those quotes and even pointed all this out in the brief time of responding to 30 things.
Yep.
But it's fun for us to be able to look at his claims. You know what he does? He offers claims as evidence of his claims. That's
exactly
what he does.
Yes.
Ken Ham was offering evidence to support his claims. Bill Nye was offering claims to support his claims. Big difference.
Yes. So, you know, the next he, of course, talks about radioactivity. That's one of their darlings. And mm-hmm. he claims it proves billions of years. Then he mentioned rubidium and strontium. So, hey, we've got a clip of that.
What we can do on Earth, these elements that we all know on the periodic table of chemicals, even ones we don't know, were created when stars explode. And I look like nobody, but I attended a lecture by Hans Bethe, who won a Nobel Prize for discovering the process by which stars create all these elements. The one that interests me especially is our good friends rubidium and strontium.
Oh, that cracks me up.
Rubidium becomes strontium spontaneously. It's an interesting thing to me. A neutron becomes a proton, and it goes up the periodic table. When lava comes out of the ground, molten lava, and it freezes, turns to rock, when the melt solidifies or crystallizes, it locks the rubidium and strontium in place. And so by careful assay, by being diligent, you can tell when the rock froze. You can tell how old the rubidium and strontium are.
All right, let's stop the tape right there.
Age for the Earth.
Let's stop the tape right there. He's making multiple false claims mm-hmm. that are overtly false. The first one is when he says that the stars, that's where all the elements in the, he showed the periodic table, and that's where all the elements in the periodic table were formed in the stars. And then he mentions, which really cracks me up, rubidium and strontium. But so what are your thoughts on the stars? We know how the elements formed. They formed in the stars.
So, Bob, we submitted a paper to a creationist journal on this very topic.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll get published. We'll see.
Yeah, and Fred, we pointed out that NASA requested a report from the National Academy of Sciences. That's pretty cool right there.
Yep.
And the report was this. What are the greatest science questions for the new century, the century we're in right now? And so the NAS published this in 2003, actually by the National Research Council. It was titled 11 Science Questions for the New Century. Well, here was question number, I think it was 5 or 6. Here it is. How were the heavy elements formed? And they said, you know, like everything over iron, which is most of them in that periodic table that Bill Nye showed on the screen. Like, these are our friends. We know how these formed. They formed in the stars. Well, this is one of the 11 big questions. How did they form, especially the ones from iron to uranium? Fred, so there, smack dab in the middle is rubidium and strontium.
Yeah.
They don't know how they formed. They used to think they formed in supernova. Now they're doubting that. In fact, a report in the journal Nature, and this is 2013, explains that, quote, the heaviest element that fusion can construct is iron. And supernova, that's what Lawrence Krauss said, a star died so you can live.
He's mocking Jesus,
right? Blaspheming, because Jesus died so we could live forever. They go on to say the heaviest elements that fusion in a star can construct is iron. That's stellar nucleosynthesis. And then he says supernova explosions, they don't have enough neutrons that you need so many neutrons to form these heavier elements. So there's all this evidence that the theory of chemical evolution, as it's called, is in crisis.
Yeah. And just last year, a Stony Brook University astrophysicist plainly stated that one of the universe's overriding mysteries is where the heavy elements originate.
Yeah, right. And that's James Latimer, very successful astrophysicist.
So Bill Nye is a little bit behind the time.
His arguments are 30 years old, and many of them are falsified by the very atheists, materialists, astronomers, biologists, evolutionists that he would appeal to.
Yep.
They would say, you know what, Bill, we don't know that.
Yeah,
we don't
exactly
know that.
Yep.
One of the things I like to do when debating atheists and evolutionists is to point out that you guys don't have answers for the general public on origins. When Darwin started with the origin of species, he assumed that species already were in existence. Mm-hmm. That's sort of cheating. Fast forward 150 years later, and the neo-Darwinists today, their origin of species begins with species already existing.
That's right.
So they didn't really make much progress in that.
Yeah.
The origin of stars, the cosmologists, the standard model for the evolution of stars begins with stars already in existence.
That's right.
How did life begin on Earth? Increasingly, they're saying it probably came from pre-existing life in outer space. Where did the universe come from? Increasingly, they're saying from the pre-existing multiverse. So the atheists do not have an answer for origins, either of the universe or life on Earth or genes, proteins, any of that stuff.
And you know, Bill Nye, he admitted that they don't understand the origin of consciousness.
Yeah, you could add that to that list, right?
That's right.
Wow.
So another one he brought up that I thought was kind of humorous was he was asking, why don't fossils swim to different layers?
Oh, yeah. And basically, that's the out of sequence fossils, right? He's saying they're all in the right order. That's what he's claiming.
That's right. And we got a clip of that.
Yeah.
We would just need one piece of evidence. We would need the fossil that swam from one layer to another. We would need evidence that the universe is not expanding. We would need evidence that the stars appear to be far away, but they're not. We would need evidence that rock layers can somehow form in just 4,000 years instead of the extraordinary amount. We would need evidence that somehow you can reset atomic clocks and keep neutrons from becoming protons. You bring on any of those things and you would change me immediately.
All you need is one, Fred.
Oh, wow.
You just need one example of out-of-sequence fossils.
Okay, what about the horses?
That's a good example. Remember they showed when I was growing up in the 70s, your evolution chapter, and it showed the horse hoofs and the toes from 1 to 2 to 3. And they said, so we could see evolution by their toes of the horse hoofs.
Yeah. Didn't it really go from like 1 to 4 to 3? To...
In fact, it was so out of order, they stopped using that one.
In fact, Niles Eldridge, a famous evolutionist, said that the only place that the horse evolution exists is in the textbooks.
And he's an evolutionist, right? And that's what I mean. Bill Nye's using 30-year-old arguments that have been falsified by evolutionists. In fact, evolutionary scientists out in Uzbekistan, they found a track of 86 hoof prints consecutive, you know, right, right, left, left, right, right, left, left. And they found it in rock and dinosaur strata. And that's like way out of order. In fact, you and I, Fred, have loved Dr. Carl Werner and his DVDs. And you remember
Living Fossils Evolution?
Living Fossils. He has identified 432 mammals that were buried as fossils in the dinosaur strata.
Yeah.
432 mammals.
Didn't one of those mammals have a dinosaur in its stomach?
That's right.
Chowed down on a dinosaur.
That's right.
You never hear about that from evolutionists or in the public school.
Yeah, this is true. And it's a crisis of out of sequence fossils. Now, you could make it a lifetime study to document the fossils that are not in the right order as claimed by Darwinism in their Tree of Life that's been cut down according to so many evolutionists. It's no longer plausible. But Walt Brown, at his website, creationscience.com, he documents and gives the refereed science journals and the science reports and all for so many out-of-sequence fossils, including, for example, photographs of horse-like hoof prints at the Grand Canyon in rocks that, according to the theory of evolution, are 100 million years before hoofed animals evolved. 100 million years before. That's a little bit out of sequence.
Mm-hmm.
There are dinosaur and human-like footprints together in Turkmenistan and in Arizona. There are rocks where they're fossilized side by side, land animals, flying animals, marine animals, dinosaur, whale, elephant, horse, and crude human tools found in phosphate beds in South Carolina. In Illinois, there are coal beds that have amber with chemicals from flowering plants. But the plants were supposed to evolve, those plants, 170 million years after the coal formed, and it goes on and on and on, out-of-sequence fossils.
Well, do you remember when Bill Nye brought up an out-of-sequence fossil?
Which?
Tiktaalik.
Oh, what? And he used that as proof for evolution.
Yeah, that was one of the darlings of evolution, but something bad happened.
So out of date, because that's the fish that supposedly crawled onto land and became a tetrapod, right?
That's right. Supposedly became a tetrapod.
Right. That's
but a problem happened a couple of years ago. We talked about it here on the show.
Oh, yeah.
They found tetrapod trackways. So, a tetrapod laid these trackways
the
down.
Footprints. Right, left,
and
right,
a strata
left.
That was like something like 10 million years older than Tiktaalik.
Yeah.
So Tiktaalik evolved into his great-great-granddad. Yeah. I mean, it totally throws the sequence out. It's done. I mean, it should be over.
And the evolutionists are so discouraged. You could read it in their articles, in their papers.
He brought up an out-of-sequence fossil and didn't even know it.
That it just dissed Tiktaalik.
So Bill Nye should now become a creationist.
And all the living fossils, like we mentioned, the fabulous DVD that we sell here at realscienceradio.com. Mm-hmm. Just click on our store. And you can get the most fabulous science DVDs and books and debates with old earthers that we've so much
fun. That's a great DVD. Living Fossils, Evolution, the Grand Experiment. Again, we sell it through the store. Highly recommend it. Great video.
And Fred, we are going to obviously have to continue this show next week because we want to get to these.
Oh, yeah. There's so much stuff.
And we'll have to speed up. But we will get to them. We'll continue it, Lord willing. But let's remind the audience that this is our telethon month to keep Real Science Radio on the air for another year. And we really need everyone's help. $25,000 is our goal. With this ministry, $25,000 goes a long way. We have a staff of 6 people who work here in the studio. Now, a few of them are full-time. 3.5 of them are full-time. The others are part-time. I know for you, it's a labor of love. For our producers, it's a labor of love. But we need the revenue to stay on the air. It is so expensive. Our goal is $25,000. If you purchase from us, we have fabulous DVDs like Flight, The Genius of Birds, Dragons or Dinosaurs. We have In the Beginning by Dr. Walt Brown. Well, we'll give you as a gift this Evolution versus God DVD from Ray Comfort just out a few months ago. Just fabulous. Yeah, the out-of-sequence layers. Fred, remember coelacanth? It was supposedly an index fossil.
That's right.
It went extinct like, 100 million years ago? Whatever it was.
Yes, and they found one alive. Well.
How about the Willamy pine? It supposedly went extinct like 100-some million years ago. They found it alive.
And well.
So I'd say that's really out-of-sequence. When they say, wherever we find this fossil, that proves that this rock is 100 million years old because that's when it went extinct. Well, it's still alive.
Well, I can't wait till next week. We talk about tree rings, ice cores, starlight, all these things he brought up, the Lake Missoula flood, the telephone analogy.
Yeah,
dogs rapid.
He said, show me how rocks could form rapidly.
Oh, yeah. We've got to
become
talk about
a creationist.
Yeah. We'll show you real easy, real quick.
Yeah, like 3 minutes. Okay. Yeah. So thanks, Fred Williams. This is Bob Inyer. You're listening to Real Science Radio. Our website, The Shortcut, is rsr.org. Just click on the store and then browse our science department, or please make a donation, or better yet, a automatic monthly donation. We need your help to stay on the air. There's no foundation behind us, no megachurch. It's me, you, Fred, and the Lord, and that's it. God bless you guys.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.